People forget that when you compete against each other, you actually try to improve. And we want to see more and fairer competition across the world, backed up and supported by a robust but also relevant and fit for purpose multilateral system.
Hello, this is the Weekly Tradecast, a podcast brought to you by UN Trade and Development. I'm Sarah Toms. We're exploring how major events are shaping trade and development and how that affects billions of people around the world. This week, we're looking at global trade, industrial policy, and the role of the private sector with John Denton. The views in this interview are those of the guest. In June, we marked the 60th birthday of UN Trade and Development with the Global Leaders Forum. Heads of government, leading economists, and other experts convened here in Geneva to chart a new development course in a changing world. John Denton, the Secretary General of the International Chamber of Commerce, was there as a panelist.
We really need the voices of the participants from emerging and developing economies to actually stand up and help us fight to enable the multilateral trading system to operate effectively in the 21st century. Because, friends, what people seem to fail to understand is the constant erosion we're seeing actually has a cost. And I'm going to be explicit with you. My hypothesis is, and I can show this now, that that cost will be borne principally on the shoulders of developing and emerging economies.
For him, an open and multilateral system is vital to promote the interests of developing countries in world trade.
Not only are we sitting here today talking about development, and we're talking about the creation of new industrial policies in order to enable greater development, we're simultaneously destroying the opportunities for development by allowing the erosion of the multilateral trading system. What is so important here is that developing and emerging economies realize that it's in their interest and start articulating what can be the elements of a grand bargain to turn that around.
I caught up with him on the sidelines of the forum to talk about the state of global trade and how the private sector can support inclusive development. Given the state of the world right now, what are the biggest challenges and opportunities for charting a new course for development?
Thinking about the world as it is today, I think really of two words, competition and conflict. And I think what we're seeing now is increasing competition, obviously, as two great powers seek to maintain or develop economic superiority in the 21st century. And that's great. Competition is always good. But without strong institutions and a rules-based order, the risk is that competition may drift into conflict. And we're already seeing a multiplicity of conflicts around the world. And I think the other observation is that we're seeing in that context a fragmentation of what we knew as the old world order. The challenge, of course, is whether this process of fragmentation or this state of fragmentation is the new normal, or is it just a blip and we will go back to what was. I wish I could say it's a blip and we go back to what it was, but looking forward into the 21st century with increased competition, without strong multilateralism to actually stop fragmentation drifting into basically protectionism and real problems for the global economy, we're going to have a challenge, I think. And that's where we actually have an obligation to try and create some order to ensure that competition is fair and competition does not lead inexorably to conflict, but can actually lead to improvement, which is what the other side of competition people forget, that when you compete against each other, you actually try to improve. And we want to see more and fairer competition across the world, backed up and supported by a robust but also relevant and fit for purpose multilateral system. And I think UNCTAD has a key role to play in developing the thinking around that because of the support you have from so many emerging and developing countries. And of course, the ICC is the mothership, in a way, of the global private sector. We have an obligation, but actually a right to play and actually develop ideas to ensure we have this kind of effective, inclusive multilateralism, which will help stop conflict emerging from this competition.
What kind of initiatives do we need at various levels so that industrial policy works for trade and development?
One of the most important global public goods we have, which is at risk of eroding and deteriorating, is actually the multilateral trading system itself. That's a rule-based system. It's not a power-based system. And the maintenance of the multilateral trading system, I think, is in the collective interest. We just did a very interesting but also very important independent economic analysis to show the cost of the drift away from an effective functioning multilateral trading system. And yeah, on a global basis, if this continues, there'll be a 5% drop in global GDP. But most importantly, the biggest hit will actually affect developing and emerging economies. You will see, if this continues to erode, a 40% drop in trade flows in Africa, 25% in the whole of the Latin American region, 40% in Asia. These are big numbers. This also, in a way, compounds the problems that exist. And industrial policy will not fix all that. And industrial policy also needs to be understood in the shades and the hues of 2024, which is where we are now, compared to where it was in the 60s and the 70s. Industrial policy now is really a tale of two halves. There's industrial policy as practiced in the developed West, and there's industrial policy which is practiced in the rest. In the developed West, what you're seeing now is an increased focus on industrial policy. We haven't seen that for a long time. We saw about $1.4 trillion worth of subsidies provided globally in industrial policy, more than 2,500 interventions directly into the effective functioning of what we know as open markets in order to enable industrial policy to be delivered. Those 2,500 interventions, something like 70% of them were actually trade distorting. So we're going to need to really think this through and actually understand the nature of industrial policy. Industrial policy is not of itself bad. It depends what it's directed towards doing. If industrial policy is going to facilitate the transition of the world in line with the Paris Agreement, there's arguments in favor of it, but not if it's trade distorting. If industrial policy is actually introduced to ensure competitiveness, then there is merit that can be found in it. But the fact is, industrial policy to enable competitiveness is also in two halves. There's a very large part of that industrial policy which is directed towards stopping competition against local businesses. That of itself is trade distorting and actually will lead to an erosion of economic fundamentals in those economies. So we need to be mindful of what industrial policy looks like. But we also should understand that industrial policy is not the same thing as economic reform. And economic reform is generally what economies need. And that's where you actually institute regulatory reform, tax reform, which operates across the whole of the economy. That's good economic reform. That's good for the economies. And that also requires focus. But at the moment, what we're seeing is interventions, many of which are extraordinarily trade distorting, and with a weakened multilateral trading system and an absence of access to rules-based decision-making around that, that will cause not a competitive advantage, but drift towards conflict.
What role does the private sector have to play to create a more sustainable and inclusive future?
The role for the private sector here is actually not to be on the sidelines, to get involved in the creation of global policy frameworks that support economic development, but in countries themselves to get involved to ensure that the interests of the private sector, which ultimately are about improving opportunities for communities, are well understood. The private sector flourishes when there's open economic settings, when there's rule of law, when there's certainty. We've seen that in the creation of the supply chains and the value chains, which were so critical to the development of the Asia-Pacific economic region. Without those, you would not have seen the extraordinary burst in economic activity. What we find interesting there was that that actually was enabled across countries without borders. The whole idea here was that the private sector got involved in creating systems which were then endorsed by policy that allowed the economies of Asia to flourish, to rise up, to actually diminish disadvantage, to actually take people out of poverty. We want to see more of that. We want to see respect for the decision-making based on good economic principles. And the private sector needs to argue for that. But importantly, The private sector needs to be able to have a voice in the determination of what the multilateral world looks like in 2024. People talk about multi-stakeholder, but what they really need to start being more concrete about is multi-stakeholder requires the private sector. So we are not an observer. We are fundamental to economic growth and to economic development. We are not, therefore, the party that should be outside the room. We should be in the room. And what I like about the way in which UNCTAD is emerging, particularly in its 60th anniversary, is the recognition of the vital role the private sector will play in enabling development for emerging economies.
That was John Denton, the head of the International Chamber of Commerce, who I caught up with at the Global Leaders Forum in Geneva. Tune into the Weekly Tradecast next week and every week for more insights on the most pressing issues around the world of trade and development. And there's even more on our website, unctad.org. I'm Sarah Toms in Geneva. Goodbye for now.